Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, March 23rd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai dismisses state media claims that his party is responsible for the disappearance of pro-democracy activist Itai Dzamara.
The state must be held accountable and responsible. Until such time, they can prove beyond any doubt that they are not responsible.
Parliament's Committee on Standing Rules and Orders starts interviewing candidates to fill vacancies in the Human Rights and Electoral Commissions, among others.
We have commenced this process today with two critical commissions, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and also the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission. We received hundreds of applications.
And five MDCT youth members who were arrested Saturday following skirmishes with the police and ZANU-PF supporters in Chitungwiza appeared in court today on charges of causing malicious injury to property. MDC founding president Morgan Tsvangirai today dismissed the state media claims that his party is responsible for the disappearance of former journalist and pro-democracy activist Itai Dzamara, who was allegedly abducted by unknown assailants a fortnight ago in Glenview suburb in Harare. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The MDC leader today visited Itai Dzamara's family to offer his support as efforts to locate him continue. Dzamara is the leader of the Occupy Africa Unity Square pressure group that is calling on President Robert Mugabe to step down for allegedly failing to run the country democratically and pushing Zimbabwe's economy into the abyss. Mr. Tsvangirai told reporters moments after meeting Dzamara's wife and his mother that a report published in the Saturday edition of the state-controlled Herald newspaper claiming that the MDC leader and his party were responsible for Dzamara's abduction was false and malicious. The former prime minister said he hoped that Dzamara's abductors would return him alive so that he would reunite with his family.
Just come to see the family, just ask them that we are in solidarity with his plight. We just hope that we in a position to remain strong and hopeful that God will always be the last arbiter on this issue. As you can see, in instances of this nature, the wife, the family, the mother is very much distressed. I experienced the same situation as I was explaining to them, that women. The family is not knowing about the whereabouts for 3 weeks. It becomes very, very difficult.
Mr. Tsvangirai also went to the barber shop where Dzamara was last seen on the 9th of March. The barber, who refused to be named, told Mr. Tsvangirai that the pro-democracy activist was bundled into an Isuzu truck while his abductors claimed that they were police officers who were arresting him in connection with a crime that had to do with stock theft. The barber claimed that the way Dzamara was forced into the vehicle while his hands were handcuffed was very suspicious, prompting him to notify the activist's family. Given this account of the last known person to see Dzamara before his disappearance, Mr. Tsvangirai said it was now clear that Dzamara was in the hands of the state.
The state must be held accountable and responsible until such time they can prove beyond any doubt that they are not responsible. But I am quite sure, let's hope that whatever has happened to you, let's not hope for any unforeseen circumstances.
The alleged abduction of Dzamara was also criticized by local non-governmental organizations and some foreign governments, including the United States and the European Union, all calling on Harare to help locate the activist. Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa told Parliament when quizzed by lawmakers over the issue that Dzamara's abductors would be brought to book if apprehended. Dzamara's abduction is similar to that of human rights activist Justina Mukoko in 2008. Mukoko was held incommunicado for several weeks after being bundled into a car at a home in Norton by state agents. Some MDCT activists like Tondera Indira and Beta Chokururama were allegedly abducted and killed in 2008 by suspected state agents, and up to now, no one has been arrested in connection with the abductions and subsequent killings. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Parliament's Committee on Standing Rules and Orders today started interviewing candidates to fill vacancies in the Human Rights Commission and the Electoral Commission, as well as pick founding commissioners for the Gender Commission and the Peace and Reconciliation Commission. Six candidates were interviewed for the one human rights vacancy available, while 12 were vying for only two Electoral Commission posts. Interviews for the Gender Commission will be conducted tomorrow, with 30 candidates against 7 vacancies. The Peace and Reconciliation Commission, which requires 8 commissioners, has 33 candidates, and interviews will be done Wednesday. Both the Zimbabwe Gender Commission and the Peace and Reconciliation Commission are new and will be getting their maiden commissioners after these interviews. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached lawmaker Nelson Chamisa, chairperson of the Legal and Procedural Affairs Subcommittee of the Standing Rules and Orders Committee, for a sense of today's interviews.
We are simply fulfilling and satisfying the constitutional requirements in terms of those independent commissions that are supposed to support democracy in terms of Chapter 12, as well as deriving our authority from Section 151, if you may recall, that sets up the Committee on Standing Rules and Orders. So that is basically what we are doing, and we have commenced this process today with two critical commissions, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and also the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission. We received hundreds of applications, and of course there was a shifting of the applications on the basis of competence, on the basis of experience, on the basis of integrity and the reach of capacity. That has defined a shortlist, which shortlist is the one we use today to then come up with the final people who are going to then be forwarded onto the subsequent following processes.
What can you tell us about the caliber of candidates that you have interviewed so far?
Well, I must say it's a rich mix of experience, you know, the dynamism of the youth, the broad spectrum of our society, from the various geographical locations of our country, the four corners of Zimbabwe. We are happy that what we are seeing is a punctuation of what we would want to see in those commissions.
That was lawmaker Nelson Chamisa, co-chairperson of the Standing Rules and Orders Committee, on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare. Five MDCT youth members who were arrested Saturday following skirmishes with the police and ZANU-PF supporters in Chitungwiza appeared in court today on charges of causing malicious injury to property. The MDCT youths allege they were assaulted by the police for destroying a ZANU-PF makeshift office that had just been constructed in the St. Mary's Township. One youth, Gerald Fokisa, is in hospital with a broken leg, while 6 others are said to have been treated and discharged. Later that night, some ZANU-PF youths allegedly went door-to-door attacking suspected MDCT youths. Police arrested 2 ZANU-PF youths who also appeared in court today. MDCT National Youth Chairperson Happy Mochidziva tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the arrested youths were both granted bail of $150 each and are expected back in court next week.
5 of our youth members were arrested and they have gone to court today, and 4 of the members have been given bail at $151. Gerald, we have a broken leg, was given a free bail because the police understand that they are the one that caused that injury and they did not go against the bail application for free bail.
May you tell us what happened?
Our members in Chitungwiza went to safeguard a place in St. Mary's
which ZANU-PF residents in Chitungwiza occupy. So when our youth went to that place to safeguard it, because it's Kangoo land and they have to give it to the people without favor. So when they were there, they removed another hut that was there that was in illegal. And if they were still there, the police then come in and started beating up our members of the youth.
Happy Mozi Chidziva is the MDCT's National Youth Chairperson in Chitungwiza. ZANU-PF youth official Innocent Hamandishe refused to comment, saying he was not aware of the incident. We failed to reach the police for a comment. The MDCT, led by Professor Welshman Ncube, says it is unfazed by the resignation of its national spokesman Nhlanhla Dube, who confirmed his move last Friday, and the defection of its Bulawayo Provincial Youth Council members who joined the Dumiso Dabengwa-led ZAPU party over the weekend. The party was last month hit by resignations from other senior party officials, including former Secretary General Priscilla Misiairambwe Mushonga, who stepped down from her position, and Vice Youth Chairman Frank Chamunorwa, who expressed dissatisfaction with the way the party is run. The party's acting Secretary General Moses Mzilandlovu tells reporter Thandekile Mhlanga his party will modify its strategies when deploying members to senior positions as a way of solving such problems.
It could be a point that you are on recruitment strategy and the way we vet people when they join the party. Because you notice that some people who really and still slept the party, you know, are people who joined us, you know, midstream. And so perhaps we did not give them time to get used to the policies of the party and the style of doing things in the party. And so they probably get shocked when they are actually finding themselves heading to work in a different style from what they were anticipating. Before we deploy people in very senior positions, we need to carry out, you know, a very thorough process of vetting them so that we then can engage them and interview them and be satisfied that they really are in the right place at the right time.
Will this not negatively affect your party?
In a way, it will affect the continuity of the party, but we are talking of a party made up of a large numbers of people. And surely there will be people within the membership of the party who will be able to assume those responsibilities.
That was Moses Mzilandlovu, Acting Secretary General in the Welshman Ncube-led MDC, on the line with Studio 7 from Plumtree.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up, women with disabilities complain gains in women's issues and rights exclude them. But first, we take a look at regional and international news. Opposition lawmakers in Sierra Leone are challenging President Ernest Bai Koroma's move to fire his vice president, calling it a fundamental breach of the country's constitution. Lee Kuan Yew, the founder of modern Singapore and architect of his rise to global economic prominence, has died. He was 91. Mr. Lee was hospitalized in Singapore General Hospital in early February with severe pneumonia and was later placed on life support. And India and China began an 18th round of border talks in New Delhi today in an effort to resolve long-standing territorial dispute. The Women and Health Alliance International, the University of Zimbabwe and Parire Nyatwa Hospital next week will launch their fourth fistula operation campaign in Zimbabwe. Obstetric fistula is a serious internal organ injury that continues to affect many poor women and girls in the developing world. the medical condition characterized by urinary and fecal incontinence is sustained during childbirth and can lead to bladder and skin infections, kidney disorders, and at times death if left untreated. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with the National Coordinator for the Program Outreach with Women and Health Alliance International, Priscilla Mabende, about the campaign.
When you look at the condition of obstetric fistula, I would like to believe we can call it an extensive condition in the sense that when you're incontinent with a urine and feces, you need to have specific pads or diapers that you use, and these are not accessible. So these girls tend to then use the rags or the cloth, and because of that now, they just come retreating. And because of the element of feces and urine, in our culture of the Ndebele, the Shona, the Tonga, all three, it's not something that is spoken about openly. Especially when an adult has a condition of incontinence, it tends to be this element of castigation.
Through your campaigns, would you say that this notion of what people are dealing with when it comes to fistula is changing?
Absolutely. The condition of obstetric fistula is nothing new to the African continent. We realize that the obstetric fistula itself as a condition is difficult to manage, but the procedure for managing this is actually something that any particular expert who's had the experience within this can manage. So we're really trying to encourage the girls to come out. Most of the women we approached, because we're doing a national outreach, whereby we actually look up from the old records of who came to seek treatment at the main government hospital, at the small clinic. And for most of them, it's the fear that can really pick. What we're saying is, yes, we can.
And focusing on that fear that women and girls say they have, what kind of campaign are you pushing to bring them in to have these operations?
Okay, what we have done is we've opened up two hotlines. I'll just give you the numbers now. 0782-640-840 or 0779-666-506. And if you could fortunate. I'll repeat the numbers again. 0782-640-840 or 0779-666-506. And we are encouraging everybody who either knows somebody with the condition or who has the condition or who is married to this person to come forward. And if they can send a message, they can send a police call, they can make a missed call on our phone or even send a WhatsApp. And when they do that, we are following up each and every call, and believe me, we have had so many, including men who are reporting their own issues of STIs or testicle problems. But the outreach has been so broad that it has been inundated with calls.
What should they expect once they make the call or send the message for assistance?
Most of the calls we've done, we do a screening. We talk to the person who sent the police call or the message. We run them through a series of questions to find out if their condition is what we're dealing with. And if it is, then we invite them through on a specific date that we give them. We're actually paying for their travel. They come through Harare, we receive them, they go through their treatment procedure, we ask them to go back home. Because we do not want to leave any case unsolved because of financial constraints.
That was Women and Health Alliance International Program Coordinator Priscilla Mabendes. She spoke with Tatenda Gumbo from Harare. Over the years, President Robert Mugabe has crisscrossed the world on government and private business. At 91, many expected him to slow down, but the veteran politician is not showing any signs of starting to delegate foreign policy matters so he could at least concentrate on national issues. His recent trips abroad and the continent have ignited fierce debate on social media, with critics attacking the ruling ZANU-PF party for abusing their leader. His backers, on the other hand, strongly believe that his foreign trips are part of his mandate to run the country, SADC, and the African Union, the two continental bodies he's currently chairing. Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reports.
In just 2 weeks, President Robert Mugabe has been to Japan and Namibia to attend the World Conference on Disaster Risk Reduction and President Hage Geingob's inauguration, respectively. And barely 48 hours after that, Mr. Mugabe was packing his bags again, this time heading north to Algeria for a state visit. Add to that, the president has been on the plane since January when he came back from holiday in Singapore and headed straight to Zambia for President Edgar Lungu's inauguration. He then went to the African Union in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, where he assumed the chairmanship of the Pan-African Organization. From there, he went back to Harare for a few days before jet-setting again, this time to pick up his ailing wife from Singapore, where she was being treated. For a 91-year-old, that's a lot of air miles and jet lag, leading him to tell a gathering at Gutama Mission, his former school, at the weekend that he had only slept for 2 hours due to his travels from Namibia back to Harare before leaving again for Algeria. President Mugabe has always had a penchant to travel, but what is setting social media on fire is more of concern of his age and the money that is being gobbled on all these trips. The Opposition Movement for Democratic Change last week said the country, with a sliding economy, is now on autopilot. Southern African Political and Economic Series Director Ipo Mandaza explains why people are unhappy about the president's trips.
It's just incredible. It's becoming a spectacle now, really. Embarrassing. Inexplicable. There seems to be no one to stop it. I think it's his own personal passion for traveling, kind of burning out himself in the process. That's how it is. Someone needs to stop it.
He says ZANU-PF is overusing Mr. Mugabe, who is the world's oldest president.
Those close to him in government, don't they realize that they're killing the old man? Or allowing him to kill himself? I would advise him against travel at his age and given his poor state of health. I would advise that they should take into account the cost to the nation, particularly at a time when the country is going through the most difficult period since independence economically.
Regional MTC renewal leader Albert Mhlanga echoes the same sentiments, adding that the president should not commit himself to many of these international political engagements.
Our president actually can postpone some of these meetings. It is not a mandatory, it is not a force that he must attend all meetings. You can see our country is in trouble.
He says these trips have affected all crucial ZANU-PF Politburo and cabinet meetings.
It is unfortunate that our president is no longer running our country. Instead of our president actually chairing the cabinet, he will also chair the Politburo, which actually is not separate from the cabinet. The ZANU-PF party, nobody is sharing everything. So it means every day, every week of our life, there is nothing going on in Zimbabwe in terms of business.
Other critics believe that the president's trips are gobbling millions of dollars in a country where the lowest paid state worker gets just over $300 a month. The Treasury Department was not at liberty to discuss this issue. Mr. Mugabe's spokesman, George Aramba, was not available for comment. Mr. Mugabe's backers are adamant that he was mandated by the people who elected him in the 2013 presidential election to perform local and international duties. Party activist and political commentator Fidelis Fengo says the president's critics are wrong.
We need to understand that the president is currently the chairman of the African Union, which then gives him responsibility over each and every other African nation that we have. Whatever problems an African country might be facing, the president is supposed to be there in his capacity as chairman of the AU. He's supposed to ensure that the continent has resources that it needs, among other things. This is in itself a very busy title, which requires him to travel a lot.
He further says some of these trips are beneficial to the people of Zimbabwe. Political analyst Professor Shadrack Kuto of the University of South Africa says President Mugabe is working for his nation, the African Union, and SADC.
Also chairperson of the SADC, the chairperson of the AU. And when people look at that, they think, oh, Mugabe is becoming very popular and so on. That is what he would tell the people. In politics, you turn those around to say, I'm very popular.
He adds that in some cases, Mr. Mugabe is engaging in these trips to look for friends, although Zimbabweans are paying for almost all these trips.
He would be selecting where he goes, to where he will be welcome, those countries.
Indications are that President Mugabe is set to travel on AU and SADC business soon after leaving Algeria. This is expected to generate more anger among his critics while boosting his political base at home, which seems to be cheering what they say is clear endorsement on the continent and beyond for a veteran leader in his heydays. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Gibbs Dube.
Please stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about President Robert Mugabe's trips abroad. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios. And in sports news, defending champions Dynamos left their fans smiling all the way back home after thrashing Buffaloes 3-0 in their opening game of the 2015 Castle Lager Premier Soccer League season at the National Sports Stadium over the weekend. Michael Kariati has more from Harare.
Goals from Simba, Nivi, Kudai Maramba and own goal left the defending champions with maximum points, but are second on the league table behind Triangle on their part at 1-5-2. Dynamos are hoping for a fifth consecutive league title, but have a lot on their hands as there are still 29 matches to go before the season comes to an end. Their bitter rivals, Capes United, also registered a 2-1 away win to Wawa Prisons. More importantly is the fact that former Dynamos son Rodri Mtuma grabbed both goals. That saw the green machine emerge victorious. Apart from Triangle, Dynamos are also tied on points with the PC Kariba, who overcame Islanders 2-0, Chicken Inn, who beat Flame Lily 2-1, and Cholocho, who shocked Harare City 1-0. One of the favorites for the title, Aumine, could only stutter to a goalless draw against Chapungu, but coach of the expensively assembled side, Luke Masomere, is satisfied. Masomere, who won the league title with AmaZulu and has also coached Dynamos and Capes United, thinks the battle is still a long way to go. FC Platinum, who are representing Zimbabwe in the Cup Confederation Cup, were held to a 2-0 draw by newly promoted Dongo Sawmills. The result is not a good omen for Norman Mapeza's side, who are preparing for their second leg tie against Young Africans of Tanzania, who beat them 5-1 in the first leg in Dar es Salaam. At the same time, Zimbabwe's Young Warriors could only manage a 1-0 win over visiting Cameroon Cubs in an All-Africa Games qualifier at Rufaro Stadium yesterday. Coach Kalisto Pasua is crying that the team did not have enough preparation time as some of the players joined camp just 3 days before the game. The Young Warriors need a draw away in Yaounde to qualify for the All-Africa Games to be held in Congo, Brazzaville, in September. The best Zimbabwe has done in the All-Africa Games was a silver medal that the Young Warriors won at home in 1995 under the coaching guidance of Winslow Grabowski. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
And time now for our mailbag. And for the first one, we have someone who doesn't say who their name is. And they say, "Hi, Studio 7, how are you all? Thanks very much for professional journalism. Please greet for me my loving wife, Jessina Tokomere, sons, Henry Charles Jr., Munyaradzi Marshall and McBride." And this one is from George Dube in South Africa, who says, "Thank you guys for the news that you dish out to us every day. You might think we don't appreciate, but deep down in our hearts, we really thank you and wish you all the best." And this one is from someone who says, "Hi, I'm a great follower. Thanks for giving us the best news." And we could go on and on and on. We have quite a lot of mail today, but unfortunately, time is not on our side. And therefore, we are going to make a quick recap of today's top stories. Opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai dismisses state media claims that his party is responsible for the disappearance of pro-democracy activist Itai Dzamara. Parliament's Committee on Standing Rules and Orders starts interviewing candidates to fill vacancies in the Human Rights and Electoral Commissions, among others. And five MDCT youth members who were arrested Saturday following skirmishes with the police and ZANU-PF supporters in Chitungwiza appeared in court today on charges of causing malicious injury to property. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamile Nkomo and Sthandekile Mhlanga. This is yours truly, Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.